So we're going to talk about multimodal pain therapy and issues regarding narcotic dependence for orthopedic patients. You know, as a surgeon, we are becoming more and more aware of the issues and problems and dangers of narcotic dependence. So I have an expert with me today, Dr. Gary Trahan, assistant professor of anesthesiology at Temple School of Medicine and director of the interventional pain clinic here at Temple University Hospital. And we're going to talk to him about that. Thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you, Saka.
So I guess the first thing I want to ask is, what is multimodal pain treatment? And, you know, how should we address that preoperatively, postoperatively? I mean, let's say I have a patient with a distal radius fracture who's come to my clinic and Maybe they've never been on pain medications before. Maybe there's somebody who's been on narcotics. So I'm kind of throwing a lot of stuff out there at you. But I mean, here's an example, a real world scenario. How should we address this, and what are the options at our disposal to avoid problems with pain medication down the road?
So multimodal pain approach is basically the way it sounds. You use different techniques, different modalities for your pain control overall. You can obviously use medications, but in medications you can use different variety of medications that belong to different family groups. You know about the opioids. The other commonly used groups of medications, or families of medications we use, are antidepressants like gabapentin, Lyrica, and also you use, anti-seizure medications like gabapentin, Lyrica, and antidepressants such as selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors such as Cymbalta and Effexor. So you can use, the idea is to use different medications that belong to different families so that you have to use less of each and hopefully avoid the side effects of each of these medications. Now, obviously, for surgery, what you can do is, one of the most common protocol is to use something like Lyrica in the beginning, along with maybe acetaminophen. Celebrex has also been used because of its primarily COX-2 activity. And then obviously, hopefully, you can combine that with nerve blocks to overall reduce the amount of opioid consumption postoperatively, intraoperatively, and to improve patient comfort postoperatively.
So there's a lot of stuff there. So, I mean, you're saying, so multimodal pain therapy, meaning rather than trying to keep going up on narcotic dosing, that you give lower doses of multiple medicines, right? You're talking about Tylenol, you're talking about Lyrica and gabapentin, and so multiple different medications at lower doses in addition to peripheral nerve blocks, in the hopes of not having to give as much narcotics, I guess, and NSAIDs. I didn't even mention that, but you talked about NSAIDs as well.
Right, and that's the goal, so that if you hit different receptors, different pain receptors in the body, hopefully you have to use less of each medication. Overall, you get better pain control. The other thing to think about is, you know, you have to distinguish between visceral pain and somatic pain. And when you get into those, bone pain, skin pain, obviously are somatic receptors, and they have less mu receptors where the opioids work. Opioids in general don't do a great job on somatic pain as much as they do on visceral pain. That doesn't mean that it doesn't work on somatic pain, it just does not do as good a job. So ideally for somatic pain, nerve blocks, including all the peripheral nerve blocks and neuroaxial blocks where you use local anesthetics, have a better outcome with regards to patient satisfaction and overall pain control.
So, for instance, patient comes in the clinic preoperatively. We indicate them for surgery. Should we start all of those medications on them preoperatively and tell them that they should expect to continue? And how long should most patients continue with these combinations of drugs postoperatively? Let's just keep the wrist fracture example.
Well, most of these medications, when you use in combination, you have to be careful about the age groups too. For example, if you use it on older people, the elderly, they have a higher risk of side effects from antidepressants and anticonvulsants. Most common side effects include sedation, drowsiness, and obviously postoperatively you have to be careful about risk of falls and things like that. So, you have to be judicious about how you use it and whom you use it. The usual combination is, you know, Lyrica with an NSAID or acetaminophen. Hopefully you're not adding antidepressants at the same time. Antidepressants may be a better idea more for chronic pain unless somebody has already been on it. If somebody comes to you already on these medications, you should definitely continue them postoperatively or at least restart them as soon as possible. If somebody has been taking opioids when they come to you, especially people who are on chronic opioid therapy, there's they already have upregulation of mu receptors. It does not make sense to think of this person as a naive opioid responder, because obviously they're going to have upregulation and increased opioid requirement postoperatively. And most of these people, when they have increased opioid requirement, you may add you may try to use a multimodal approach, which may help you to some degree, but you would still need the opioids in the long run.
Now, you mentioned elderly patients as a group where you have to be careful with the dosing. Are there any other contraindications or patient groups where a multimodal approach is maybe not the best thing to do?
I don't think there's a contraindication to multimodal approach. You just have to be careful and be selective about what modalities you use and tailor it to the patient. For example, if somebody has renal failure, you obviously have to be careful about anticonvulsant dosages. And if you give them, so for example, the same amount of gabapentin you would with normal renal function, you can easily get in trouble, especially with the clearance of the drug.
And what about non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications? You know, to some degree, there are certain concerns perioperatively with using NSAIDs. You mentioned COX-2 inhibitors. Are those the only ones really that have a place here, or are there other NSAIDs, and what roles do they seem to have with orthopedic surgery patients?
I think with orthopedic surgery, NSAIDs have a limited role, primarily because of concerns about bone healing and things like that. Again, you know, in these situations, we always talk to the surgeons, make sure we're on the same page. If there's no contraindication to using NSAIDs with regards to healing, and especially bone healing, then obviously you would add NSAIDs for sure. You have to be concerned about any of the problems that the patient has, for example, asthma, and what the reaction is to NSAIDs. Barring all those medical concerns, if there's no contraindication to NSAIDs, it's a very good thing to use, especially because they work better for somatic pain.
You know, as an orthopedic surgeon, I can tell you the move away from NSAIDs for bone healing concerns is starting to diminish a little bit. And I guess what I mean by that is I think many surgeons are not finding enough convincing evidence in the literature universally that NSAIDs are going to impair bone healing, fusion, or fracture. Those are the two main clinical scenarios. And I think some surgeons are starting to feel that the risk of narcotic problems are maybe greater than the potential risk for bone healing. So I think you're starting to see more NSAIDs used also, certainly in my world. What about, narcotic dependence? I mean, how much of a problem is this? I mean, I know you also see patients on the outpatient side, in pain management. How big of a problem is it? I mean, is it something that you feel you have something to tell us about as the surgeon community? Do you find that it's not well understood, or what do you want to shed some light on about that?
So narcotics, U.S. is probably the one country where we tend to use narcotics the most for acute and chronic pain. For acute pain, it definitely makes sense to use opioids. I mean, at that point, the idea is to overcome and recover from the surgery. It becomes a problem when you go into the chronic state, when people start taking it 3-4 months down the road once you have recovered from the healing process. It is an issue, and especially in Philadelphia, especially in the Northeast Philadelphia area, where you do get a lot of patients who are seeking primarily opioids and primarily seeking short-acting opioids like Percocet. So you have to think about, you have to take into consideration the euphoria that they're seeking, not just the pain control. At that point, you also have to think about other alternatives. If you have to use opioids, if, you know, if the healing is not going as well as you would like from the surgical standpoint, maybe switching to a long-term opioid is a good idea. It's always good to talk to them and mentally prepare them about what the goals are long-term with regards to opioids. It's always good to tell them, look, for short-term, the idea is to control your pain, but after that, we have to reduce the opioids if you cannot completely stop it right away. The bone healing may take up to 5-6 months. The pain may take up to 6 months to resolve, but it doesn't mean you have to be in the same dosage of opioids for that long. The other thing to remember is that if somebody has been on chronic opioids, it is not unusual for their opioid requirements to jump up 100% postoperatively. So a lot of times what I see is people get admitted with a substantial amount of opioids, for example, 40 or 60 milligrams of oxycodone a day, and then postoperatively they're treated as any other patient who's never been on opioids. So you have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, if they're about 40 to 60 milligrams of oxycodone a day, maybe they'd be close to 100 milligrams of oxycodone post-op requirement, plus or minus.
Okay. Well, I guess before we come to a close, I did want to ask one other question, which was about, so staying on narcotics then, I mean, which, you mentioned Percocet, which medications do you see tend to be more problematic, or which medications do you find less problematic that you kind of wish surgeons were using more? And I'm sure it varies patient to patient, but I don't know. Do you have any suggestions regarding that? I've certainly heard different things from different pain specialists on, you mentioned short acting, euphoria. I mean, do different drugs have different characteristics in that regard?
Sure. I mean, you know, you have to be careful about the opioids. Let me first say that one of the fastest ways to understand what a patient's requirements, post-operative opioid requirements, sometimes is just using a PCA. PCA gives us a good idea very quickly in a 24-hour period what the requirements are, and then we can convert that into oral medications. It's very hard to titrate oral medications, especially when somebody is very uncomfortable. Oral medications may not be a bad idea in somebody who's opioid naive, but if somebody's opioid tolerant and if they have larger requirements, an IV medication or IV route helps you titrate much faster to get to the endpoint that we are seeking. With regards to opioids, obviously, as you know, there are multiple opioids. People have preferences in what they like to use and don't like to use. Oxycontin was one of the most abused drugs with the pill mills in Florida. Now that is not as big of an issue because they changed the formulation, and the risk, the abuse risk potential is much lower. Percocet or oxycodone short acting is, however, a different issue. It does give euphoria, and some people do enjoy taking it just for the euphoria aspect of it and not necessarily for pain control, control only. The other thing to consider also is drugs like methadone. Methadone gets a bad rap from a lot of physicians, and yes, it has been in some cases being a concern as far as overdosage. Methadone has a longer half-life, so the good thing is it stays in your body longer. The advantage of methadone is that along with the mu receptor, it also acts on the NMDA receptors, which may help with bone pain more than other opioids. The problem with methadone is if you don't know how to take it and if you escalate the dosage too quickly, you can easily overdose. Methadone also is very variable in its metabolism. So, you know, liver conditions, other conditions may actually increase its half-life to up to 4 to 5 days sometimes. It takes 3 to 4 half-lives to reach plateau, you know, levels in your bloodstream. Usually, you know, the recommendation is to start low and go slow. So you don't escalate or increase methadone dosages for at least a week after initiation. If you do it sooner, you can run the risk of overdosing on methadone, and then people have died from it. Usually you see that when methadone is diverted onto the streets, onto, you know, give it to your friend who is not used to taking it. You have to be careful because you may be opioid resistant or tolerant, but most deaths happen sometimes in people who are opioid tolerant because they're opioid they're methadone naive, even if they're opioid tolerant. So methadone is tricky. It's a good drug. You have to know how to use it. For acute pain, it has no role unless somebody has been on narcotics for a long time and has been on high amounts of narcotics. For acute pain after surgery, it's best to go with shorter-acting drugs that you can wean off faster. You may want to use longer-acting if the requirements are high.
All right. Well, I certainly think the information about methadone there is going to help clear up some misconceptions. And I think we touched on a lot of stuff. I mean, we talked about multimodal pain therapy. We talked about briefly on nerve blocks. And I think maybe that's a good topic for maybe a future podcast. But I think that it's, you know, as you mentioned, narcotic use is a problem, leads to abuse in many cases. And I think many of you may want to consider a multimodal pain approach with your patients. And I hope the podcast here was helpful. And I want to thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Saqib. My pleasure. See you.